Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello, Dykes. Happy Pride Month to a bunch of you for where it's Pride Month. I have a couple of quick updates. I'm trying to hide it in my voice, but I'm actually very under the weather. Last week, I came down with pink eye, and I've tested for COVID twice because on top of it, I also have like a cold and other symptoms that all kicked in after the fact. And I've never had pink eye before, or at least that I remember in my life. It's been really bad, actually. I've seen a couple doctors. It's only gotten worse. It started spreading to the other eye. Even though I've been so careful about washing my hands, not touching my face, all of that. But what are you going to do? Life happens. What this means, though, is that I very, very sadly won't be going to Girls in Wonderland this year. I was supposed to perform on the comedy show on June 2nd, but there's just no way that my eye's going to clear up in time, and that also that I would be feeling better. So I'm so sad about that. I hope everybody going has the most amazing gay time. I know things in Florida are really tough right now, and people come from all over the world to go to Girls in Wonderland, but a lot of the people there are from Florida. And I know that there was some debate about whether or not people should even go to Florida, given the hostility of the government. But I think that the queer people who live in Florida really need this party. They need this celebration of queerness and this fun and joy that comes with Girls in Wonderland. So I hope that you don't let conservatives win and deter you from going and celebrating the crew at Girls in Wonderland. They do so much to make sure that it is a safe and inclusive event. So just can't speak highly enough to my past experiences there. So sad that I won't be there. Go to the comedy show anyway, though, because Sydney Washington is headlining. She's hilarious. She's done the podcast before, and then she's also performed on a lot of our live shows. You know, the other day when the pink eye was just starting, I thought I had it under control. I went to a WNBA game with Cecilia, and my eye, like, it was starting to look bad, but I put on just like regular glasses and a baseball cap that said Groom on it. I bought it for $5. I thought it was funny. And I thought I'd be kind of like incognito, covering up the pink hair. Didn't really want anybody to see me looking gross and sickly. So again, this was before the other symptoms kicked in. I just had like an itchy pink eye at that point. So I'm at the game, and we sit down, and immediately I could tell that the people next to us are Dyking Out listeners just by the way they look at me. And they said something in the third quarter, which was nice. But like, as soon as I felt recognized, I changed my glasses and put on my sunglasses. And so I'm like this person in sunglasses in an indoor basketball game, which usually isn't me. Then they start playing the song Crazy in Love and start featuring couples on the Jumbotron. And because I have this groom hat, I think, they put me and Cecilia on the Jumbotron. Then I start getting texts from like people I know who are at the game, who are like, oh my God, just saw you on the Jumbotron. Messages from Diking Out listeners being like, hey, I'm at this game, saw you on the Jumbotron. Looking like a total tool in these sunglasses and this groom hat. I was like writing everybody back being like, I think I am not this person. It was kind of funny until it wasn't funny, until my eye got really bad. And after the game, I've been kind of shut in since. And it's been rough. I have been binging The Ultimatum on Netflix. I guess that's the only good thing that has come out of it, is that it's given me the time to watch trash queer TV. So many thoughts. Maybe I'll post them on TikTok, where I'm starting to be active at TGI Carolyn. I also have a bunch of shows this June that my eye should clear up for. So if you want to see any of my shows, if you're in the New York area, I'll be posting those on my Instagram at TGI Carolyn. There's even going to be one show upstate for anybody who lives more like in the Catskills area. I'm doing a fun show there. Big show, of course, for me is always Love's a Pitch. I'm doing the Pride edition. I haven't done a Love's a Pitch since Valentine's Day. So that's going to be a fun one. If you want to be in the audience or if you want to be a backup contestant, let me know. That's going to be June 20th at Come On Everybody. And those are my updates and announcements for now. And you're about to listen to another fun episode from the back catalog of Diking Out. Hope you're all doing well and filling your weeks with the gayest things.
Pandemic kind of took improv from a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
It's harder to get a group of people in one place just to play pretend. It's like, is it worth it?
We were already questioning if it was worth it
in the first place.
Before the pandemic.
I'm diking out, you're diking out. Let's dike out together. See what it's all about.
Diking out, diking out, diking out, diking out.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast that's cool for the summer. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're diking out with actor and comedian Emily Dayton Evans.
Hi.
Yay. So excited. Hi.
so excited. But first, we have some announcements. We are bringing a new show, an old show, shifting it. I don't know. What are we doing, Melody?
We're kind of adding more shows. We're adding more to the plate. We're doing more for the Brooklyn Dykes. We're going to be doing stand-up shows and more karaoke parties at Come On Everybody, because we know it's a schlep sometimes to Stonewall. We're still going to be doing our Stonewall show maybe quarterly.
Yeah, we need to figure that out. But
we'll figure it out. But we're definitely doing a lot more in Brooklyn.
And our next show there, it's going to be a stand-up show August 12th at Come On Everybody. We'll post about that on our Instagram. This week, if you're listening when this episode comes out, I'll be at Come On Everybody with my show Love's a Pitch. That will be Wednesday, July 27th. So maybe there are tickets left. And if there are, you should snag one up and come and see the chaos past guests Lorena Russi, Kendall Payne, and Jess Henderson are all judges on the show, and they are very chaotic, and we're adding an extra element of nutso this time. So if last time wasn't a hot mess enough for you, this time we'll definitely top that. So come to that.
And just rate and review. We love that. It helps other people find us. 5 stars, please. Also, we have a Patreon. We love our patrons, okay? They're so cool.
Emily is supportively nodding to all of these announcements, especially like rate and review. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, patrons.
You have to.
What's going on Patreon? We have extra episodes, 1 bonus episode a week. Come on, for $5 a month. For $10, we have a Discord. We have Zoom hangouts.
For $15 a month, you don't have to listen to ads, which we love our sponsors. They support us. But also, it takes a lot of time. If you like your content uninterrupted, just go over to Patreon.
Yeah. I'm obsessed. One of our patrons, Sophie, is so fucking cool. She has a band called Waltzer. I listen to it. They're very good. And Sophie's going to be in Brooklyn playing at TVI August 26th. We're so excited. You can follow _Waltzer_ for more information on that and also see where she'll be playing near you. She tours all over. All right. Enough business. Let's get into the gayest thing. Carolyn?
Yeah.
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
All right. Well, a couple things. I mean, I celebrated 5 amazing years of marriage with my current wife, Cecilia. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Current
wife. And I think she's going to stick around. We're supposed to be out of town, and then we ended up staying in town, and we went to Mohonk Mountain House for the day. Per your recommendation, Melody, you told me it was a great place.
It is gorgeous. I don't know if I could ever afford to stay there, at least not where I'm at right now in life.
We need many more patrons to afford one night.
It's humongous, right? I think I've done ice skating there once.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and it has like all of the water. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
You stayed there?
To stay there, I think it's like $600 a night or something crazy like that. But you can get a day pass to go.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's the move. Because it's only like an hour away from where we live. And it definitely feels like you're not in New York State when you're there, right?
Right.
It feels like you're in like a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also like the resort in Dirty Dancing a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something, I don't know. I didn't actually like go into it. I bought a pass for the hiking. I did their like rock scramble big hike thing.
Yeah.
Which is like much cheaper. And I could only see over the resort. So at least from that vantage point, it felt very Dirty Dancing.
Well, it was nice, and it's right by the town of New Paltz, which we've never been to. So we stopped in New Paltz afterwards and definitely went into like some witchy stores. It's a college town.
I went to that.
To the witch store?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And we each bought a tarot card. So they had these like single tarot cards being sold. And it was some artist who was trying to make a tarot deck where each card was commissioned by a different artist. And they had like a bunch of leftover single ones. So Ceci and I, we both picked out like a single card, like felt which one was mm-hmm. calling out to us and read it. And we're like, okay, we have to buy these and take for $1. We splurged $1. We took the tarot card home with us. That was pretty gay. Until last night, I felt extra gay because Melody and I, we were on a show together, Funny Haha, Funny Queer at Metropolitan Bar. And I knew Melody was running late. So before she got there, I texted her a heads up of all the dykes to watch out for. I'm like, look, this is who's here. Avoid, avoid, avoid. They're just like backstories, drama, whatever. I'm like, you know, it'll be fine. Just like, do not get into conversation with this person, this person, this person. And how gay is that? Right?
So
that's
gay.
So gay.
Like literally dykes to watch out for.
Literally the Bechdel book.
Book, yeah.
Dykes to watch out for by Alison Bechdel. Yeah, that was pretty gay. And I really appreciated it. I was swerving. Like I walked in like bobbing and weaving like straight to the stage.
It's so good to have a heads up in those situations because you can really, when there's so many dykes on the list.
Saved me so much like squeamish conversation. Ugh. Thank you, Carolyn.
Right. Like, I feel like we're getting a little bit better at that because the last time we were somewhere, too, I'm not going to say where, but as you were leaving, you're just like, heads up, this person is probably going to try to trap you in an awful conversation. Avoid. Yeah. And I'm like, great, great, we're leaving.
I am very good at breaking up those conversations. Like, my girlfriend's very polite and she'll stay in a conversation for a while. But if I'm ready to go, then I'm ready to go. And I'm pretty good at coming over and being like, oh, this was so fun. We're leaving. and just ending it right there.
Yeah, I got to get better about that.
I need like a go-to line, like, I have diarrhea or like something that's just like, nobody's going to argue you. Like, just get out of that conversation. Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Well, I'm celebrating 6 years with my lover, Allie. Our actual anniversary is tomorrow, but we have her niece coming into
Congrats.
Town. She just landed. We're gaunting, gay aunting for the week. We're,
for the anniversary.
Yeah. She, it was the only time she could come. I'm cool with it. I love her. She's adorable. She's 12 years old. We're taking her to Wicked. Yes, she packed a ball gown. We're taking her to Coney Island. We're going to take her to Top of the Rock. We're going rollerblading. It's going to be so cute. All she wants to do is, quote, see big buildings and wants to know if there's Dunkin' Donuts in the city because I, quote, have to have my coffee. She's so cute. So she idolizes Charli D'Amelio, whose, like, whole brand is Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Oh, my gosh.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. She's always, at least in the beginning, in her rise, she always had an iced coffee from Dunkin' Donuts. And then, like, a lot of little tweens were like, absolutely, gotta have my coffee. And it's like the Frappuccino type drinks that barely has. It's mostly sugar.
right.
So we're gonna pump her full of sugar and hit the town, okay? We celebrated by going to the queer beach by ourselves. Very different experience. I feel like at Reese Beach, Emily, do you go to Reese Beach?
I do.
Okay. Do you feel like there are just so many Brooklyn queers there that it feels like a networking event?
Yes.
Most of the time. Yeah.
Like, absolutely. On the 4th, I was at the beach, and the beach was so packed that it's like I wasn't even at Reese.
I was there.
I had to be adjacent. But there was a point where, like, me and all of my friends were like, let's do a stroll. And it was very much see and be seen. You walk around.
Yes.
You see who you know. You're saying hi to everyone. It's a job now when you go.
It is. It's exhausting.
That's what keeps me away from it. Yeah. Like, when you say that you and Allie went alone, I'm like, how did you go alone? Because anytime you go, I assume there's at least 20 people you
well,
know.
Well, what we did was go adjacent. Like, we went to, and what okay. I realized is that's the lesbian side. Like, I never knew. Like, the deep end of Reese Beach, like the absolute end, it gets gayer and gayer, but it's like a lot of gay guys. It's a lot of queers, a lot of dykes, a lot of trans, non-binary people are hanging out there, of course. But then if you don't go all the way in, just like where that burger stand used to be, two dudes, like just like right in front, that area is all lesbians, and there's so much more space. It's like you're jam-packed like sardines in that super gay part, but it was still very queer.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of tourists, like gay European men who like knew they should go there but didn't realize you have to go all the way in, so they're like, we're here, we're queer, you know, like so Allie and I kind of hid from everyone because we knew we had friends there that day but didn't go like all the way in, and it was lovely.
Right.
And then you get that square footage. You get to really lay out.
Like, truly, we had a full, unobstructive view of the water. Never happens there.
Wow.
And we took some mushrooms and took our tops off and had a lovely time.
How did the mushrooms go? Because you've had varied experiences with that.
Yeah, I'm on antidepressants, so I have to take, like, a lot for it to work.
Does that affect it?
Yes, big time. SSRIs.
This explains something, because I've done shrooms a few times, and I'm like, I don't think I'm tripping. I don't think it's really ever doing anything.
It takes a lot.
That's
it. I take an eighth to the face, and then I'll maybe feel like a little trippy, but nowhere near what my friends feel with the same batch and like half of an eighth.
Oh, wow.
The only time I really felt it was in Amsterdam. I went and it was like real deal. Like, I went to a store, picked from a menu. It was like, it really worked. But also I have to like fast a little bit.
Mm.
And
right.
So much goes into it. But what Allie and I did, we weren't like tripping. We took 7 microdose gummies each, so a dose. Like, and it was like earlier in the day, so there wasn't too much in our stomach. Like, we felt like it was like our senses were heightened. We were very giggly. Like, it was a little trippy. Like,
nice.
Man, did I love the feeling of wet sand, let me tell you. Allie's jumping in the water being like, you gotta try this, I feel like a dolphin. Like, it was very silly. And it was fun. And, you know, I always recommend re-speech on this podcast, but you got to go to the lesbian part. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, now that I know that it's right outside, it makes sense.
Outskirts, yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah. Lesbians love square footage.
Yes. Speaking of which, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
Okay, so last night, my girlfriend and I got into an argument over who owns the walkie-talkies that we have in the house. And I'm like, I would have never... Someone asked me if I had walkie-talkies yesterday, and I enthusiastically said yes. And I was like, okay, that is the gayest thing I've done this week. And then I told her that, because she's a huge fan of this podcast. And so she's been asking me, like, and pitching things for, like, the gayest thing that I did this week.
Yes.
And I was like, let me come up with it on my own. But so I told her that I was going to say that. And then she was like, but those are my walkie-talkies. And I was like, okay, well, now this argument is the gayest thing that I've done, is argue over whose walkie-talkies these are.
Oh, that's so great. Did we come to a conclusion?
Okay, listen. So I think that they are ours because it's a whole saga. So you guys know that I tore my ACL recently and I like...
Yes.
Okay, so I tore it skiing, which I started doing because she loves to snowboard. And so during the pandemic, when it was like, oh, there's no safe, fun activities, it was like, oh, snowboarding, being outside in the cold, that's totally COVID safe. So then I started learning how to ski and we were given walkie-talkies by one of her friends. We were given them for us to use when we were on the mountain. So I believe it was a joint gift. She thinks that they were given to her. But I'm like, listen, I tore my ACL for you, so there are walkie-talkies now.
For sure. Oh my gosh. This one, like, this is true love. Two, I've never gone skiing in my life, so I didn't know that that's a thing, that people have walkie-talkies to communicate with each other.
Yeah, well, because it's like not everybody goes down the mountain at the same speed. So it's like if you're waiting for someone, and like people get hurt constantly. That's kind of the thing with snowboarding and skiing. It's like, oh, you're just going to get hurt.
Definitely.
That's why I don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I don't do it.
Do you, Melody?
I grew up snowboarding. I'm from New England. Like, my elementary school had a program called Ski Wednesday, even, and we would, like, all hop in a bus and go. I first skied, but then I... This is very gay. I got really into Blue Crush, and I... Maybe even actually before that, before Blue Crush came out, I was just really into surf culture. It was really because, like, I would look up surfers that looked very dykey, and I was like, I don't know if I want to be them or be with them, whatever. But I can't do that in Connecticut. So I started snowboarding, and yes, many an injury. And then I moved to Chicago for like a decade. I didn't obviously get to do that. I just left my snowboard behind. But in the pandemic, I wanted to start doing it again. But Allie, my girlfriend, does not do anything that really involves hand-eye coordination, we'll be honest. But we said that this winter she will learn to ski because it's a lot easier to learn.
That's what they said.
While I snowboard. They say skiing is easier to learn but harder to
master.
Snowboarding's harder to learn, easier to master.
Yeah.
And that's true from experience. So that's what we're doing this upcoming winter. New York has some program where you can get a... like season pass, and there's like buses that go from the city, this little like club you can join. So
as a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like Hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
Wow, well, if she needs to borrow any, I had just invested in skis and ski boots and the rods, truly like right before the trip where I tore my ACL. So wow. If she needs any of them, I was just getting good, you guys. I had not, yeah. I had never done it. And I grew up in Vermont. And so like everybody else grew up skiing and snowboarding.
But I'm
one of five kids. And so it's like there was no way my parents were going to pay for all five of us to do that. And so I just did it. And my mom told me, she always told me growing up that I was too fragile and that I would get hurt. And it sucks that she was right.
Oh, wait, I didn't know we had the same mom. That's so weird. That's so weird.
Yeah.
My mom pulled me out of soccer because they didn't cancel games if it was raining. And she's like, you're going to get a cold. Like, you're too fragile.
Too fragile. And a cold. The end of the world.
I could have been a soccer dyke. Yeah. Ugh. I could have been a soccer dyke.
You still can.
I guess so. I guess queer soccer is a thing, but also the fear of getting injured for me is like, because as you experience getting an injury while living in New York,
ooh,
it's like one of the worst places.
I didn't even think yet of the subway
to have to get around.
I didn't think of any of it either. And then I knew someone who tore their ACL like 3 weeks before I did. And he lives in the suburbs and he doesn't have any stairs in his house. And it's like, I have to walk upstairs just to get to my apartment. Like I had to crutch up the stairs the day I had the surgery. It is wild. But I think it just makes me tougher and cooler.
Totally.
For sure.
And all disabled people in the city are badass for that reason. Like, it's
tougher
actually
and cooler.
Gross how most of the subways are not accessible.
Right. You have to go so far out of your way. And like the systems that they have in place, like I know that there are like specialty vans and stuff, but like the timing it takes to like actually get those rides and benefit from the systems the city has in place for people with disabilities, especially disabilities around mobility is.
Yeah. I have a friend with MS who relies on that. And it's always like, we'll see if I make it. Like getting those vans.
There's a bus stop right in front of my apartment. And if there's a car parked too far out, then the bus can't pull up close enough to the curb to like lower to let in people who are on wheelchairs. And I've watched it happen before where the bus driver's like, sorry, and just drives away.
Oh my God.
No.
Yeah, it's a rough place. It's a rough place, a tough city.
It really is.
Wait, I have to ask, are you using the walkie-talkies now for like other, like, did you use it when you had your ACL and you're like, I need water? Like,
I wish. Okay. So before I tore my ACL, I like got a third degree sprain on my ankle. And when that happened, I know I'm a little bit accident prone. I also,
you are fragile. Yeah.
This stuff just happens to me. I was leaving work. This was in 2018 and I worked in Chelsea Market. And I was like rushing out of there. I was completely sober and I walked headfirst into a pole and I split my head open and I had to get stitches. I was completely sober. I just was walking so fast.
Because you want to get out of there, especially, yeah, I like, imagine if you work there. Because I go in there when I have like friends in town, family in town, bring them, and it's
so stressful.
Not long before I have a panic attack.
Yeah, so I was trying to get out, but then I walked into the pole, and it's like I heard the contact. Like, I heard the pole before I felt it, and my first thought was like, I knocked my teeth out. And once my teeth were there, I was like, I'm fine. So then I went to keep going, and then this couple had been walking by, and they were like, ma'am, are you okay? And I, like, turned to them. I was like, I'm fine. But they're like, you're bleeding. I touched my head, and there was just, like, so much blood.
Oh, yeah, my really God. Freaked
out. Yeah. But so when I sprained my ankle, I went to a Goodwill, and I got a little bell, a little porcelain bell. And I was like, I'm going to ring this whenever I need something. And
yes,
my girlfriend was like, no, absolutely not. So she did not let me use the walkie-talkies either.
Why? That's not as demoralizing as the bell. That was like a 90s TV thing or movie. Like, someone would get sick and like get a little bell that you either ding or ring.
It feels very old Hollywood.
Yes. Maybe it's not. Yeah, it's way later than 90s.
What is that movie with Joan Crawford and Bette Davis where it's like Joan Crawford is the sick sister and she's like locked away in a room and Bette Davis goes crazy and like keeps her there?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. My friend showed it to me after my surgery because she was like, this is you now. The one who's like locked away in the room. Oh, it's a really good movie.
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Yes, that's it. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. It's a really wild. So Bette Davis like comes upstairs. She hates her sister. And she comes up and she brings her dinner. And her dinner is it's a squirrel that she killed. It's just in the yard.
Oh my God.
They really go there with it.
Wow. I need to watch this right away. Or we need to remake it as a queer rom-com.
That would be really good. And I think so there's a neighbor.
Yeah, like they're not sisters. Yeah.
There's a neighbor who's obsessed with Joan Crawford's character, who's like the old movie star. And that, I think, would be the romance in between the two of them. There's, like, lots of yearning looking through windows.
Yes. You weren't thinking the romance would be between the sisters.
I thought about it for a second, but okay, I decided ultimately no.
Yeah. Okay, good call.
I wasn't sure if we could all get behind that.
I feel like it's been done by some male director, you know?
Absolutely.
We don't want to step on his toes.
Absolutely.
For sure. I definitely, like, I was a sickly child, so I definitely did have a bell.
I always wanted one.
Yeah, because I had, like, multiple surgeries as a child for things. And, you know, if there's, like, an upstairs and a downstairs in your house, you need a bell to get mom's attention. Like,
did you like the bell?
Yeah, I was a kid. I didn't care about how obnoxious it was for my mom. But, like, I remember, like, my friends' homes would have, like, intercom systems in them. And I thought that was so wild. Like, do people do that anymore?
Our jaws just dropped.
Yeah, both of our jaws dropped at the same time. Yeah. I've only heard of intercom systems in schools.
No, like, you've never seen this at a friend's house?
No.
I wasn't friends with Rockefellers, so...
No. I mean, my one friend, her great uncle was the president of Mexico. So, like, I think they were a fancy family. They had intercom.
Yeah, they had the intercom hookup.
But I had, like, less fancy friends who definitely, like, in a house that's, like, not that big, like, had intercoms. And you could, like, call into the different rooms. And I always thought that was so funny. Like,
that was, like, the height of luxury for at least what I was jealous of my friends for. It was, like, if someone had a second line. And they got to have that in their room. And they'd be like, hold on, let me ask my mom. And then they'd call, like, the house line.
Yes.
For me, it was if anybody had a pool, I was like, you are living a life of luxury.
Yeah.
I had this one friend who, like, lived around the block.
A pool in Vermont. Wow. Luxurious.
Uh-huh. And I would just constantly try to weasel my way over. I would just, like, walk by her house because it was before, you know, cell phones. You couldn't text or anything. So I would just kind of loiter in her front yard to see if they were home and if they would let me in the pool.
I did have a pool growing up in Buffalo.
Carolyn, can you log off?
Hey, Carolyn's a Kennedy.
Yeah.
No. But now I'm thinking, like, wait, were people just friends with me because of my pool? But actually, like, a lot of people had pools in Buffalo. It's weird how many people have pools in Buffalo, but I think it's because nobody has air conditioning. Mm-mm. Because it's Buffalo, so everyone, like, cools off by going in their pools. I don't know. But, like, yeah, on, like, especially hot days, like, I noticed friends would be, like, randomly walking by my house and be like, oh, hey.
Like, I don't know, Carolyn. You said you were a sickly child. Like, I don't know if you made these friends just being out, scrapping around on the street. So maybe. No.
Yeah.
But if everybody had a pool, then you must have been, there must have been something special about your pool for them to come
about
to
my pool. This is a little bit sad. Now I have this, like, distinct memory of me being, like, sick and unable to be in the pool, but I told people that they could come over and swim in the pool, and I was just, like, in my bedroom watching from the window as they were all having fun in the pool.
Tragic.
And that is what built your character, and that is why you are who you are.
Yeah, that's my origin story.
That's so giving, though. If I had had a pool and I was sick and people asked to go in the pool, I would have said no.
Yeah, same.
I said, if I'm not having fun, no one's having fun. Same. Kind of always been the MO for me.
I mean, let's get into your origin story.
Yes,
my origin story.
Yeah, you said something. You're like, oh, the city's rough. And you kind of dropped into a character accent that did remind me of Marvelous Miss Maisel. And you were in it.
Let's talk
about your actor journey. Let's talk about what you've been up to.
Ooh, yes. As an actor. With Maisel is wild because Maisel is the very first TV show that I ever auditioned for.
Oh my God.
And that was like 4 years before I ended up booking it. And so I had been auditioning for that show for so long before I finally got onto it. Yeah, my origin story as an actor starts at age 4. My mom put me into dance, and she put me on the stage. And then when we were, like, in our pose for the final bow and I heard the applause, I then was like, oh, I'm staying here. So everybody else got up because they were like, oh, it's done. And I stayed, and the dance teacher had to come carry me off. And so that is when a star was born. I was like, I'm made for this. And then... yeah, and so, I mean, I came to New York, as all of us dreamers do. Mm-hmm. Also, side note, my therapist said to me recently, she loves to talk about my dreams, and I love to talk about my dreams. And my girlfriend told me recently that no one wants to hear you talk about your dreams, except for your therapist. And I repeated this to my therapist, and she said, well, Emily, not everyone's a dreamer.
I just got goosebumps.
I was like, okay, so you think you're a dreamer? And you're confidently saying that to me, like, no hint of irony or anything.
Wow.
So I think we're all dreamers if we move to New York.
Yeah, that's a New York therapist.
Yes.
Yeah, she really is.
I love that.
Yeah, then I moved to New York. I auditioned for Maisel the first time, and I was called back, and I was like, so easy. I was like, acting is so easy, you guys. I got one audition. I'm going to book it. And then it wasn't until during the pandemic, and it was so incredible to finally do it. My scene was with Alex Borenstein.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was super fortunate. I've done a few, like, small TV jobs where it's like, you go, you have a few lines, you're only there for the day, so you're seeing, like, all the main cast interact, but you're just kind of on your own, like, ooh, wild. But for Maisel, it was me and, like, a series of other girls who were also in this scene, who were also day players. And for a lot of them, it was their first time on set. And so I got to go in and kind of feel like a pro. And so all of them were super afraid to talk to Alex, but I was like, I can do it. And so we chatted about how in the scene took place in her office. And in her office, in a lot of the scenes, if you've watched the season, there's pigeons in there. And they would have live pigeons there. And she had told me when we were rehearsing that there would be live pigeons during our scene. And I was so excited. But then they ended up cutting them for time.
Oh.
Cutting the pigeons for time, which I was bummed about. But I got to talk to Alex Borenstein about the pigeons. And that made my day.
I mean, you looked incredible in that scene.
Oh my God,
the costume.
Right? What's so funny is that I So when I had that very first Maisel audition and callback, when I showed up to the callback, I was the only girl wearing pants. And one of the girls like sitting in the waiting room was like, wow, you chose to wear pants.
Brave.
I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure they wear pants in the 60s. But so I didn't book that one. And then when I went to my costume fitting, I came in and the woman was like, set out some pants for me. And then I told her that story about the callback. And she was like, that's so funny. Our costume designer looked at the photo of you and said, this one would wear pants.
Dyke.
I was like, okay, gaydar. She knew. And then I did. And I thought I looked so good.
Oh, yeah.
And that hair,
yes.
The hair that they did was incredible. I had like a shag haircut at the time. And I was like, oh, no, is this going to be hard for them to style? But it actually curled perfectly. And then I did not wash it for like 3 days. I really tried to keep it because it looked so good.
Really, truly.
That's so fun. I had a friend who did background work on Boardwalk Empire. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, even as just being in the background, you get like 3 hours of hair and makeup and are like given this like extraordinary costume. And
it's so fun. It really makes it. Once you have someone else doing your makeup, you're like, okay, I'm an absolute star.
Yeah.
When I did my first TV job was on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which was so incredible. It was like the last season. And in that one, Ellie Kemper had to open up a box with butterflies in it. So this is, again, me working with live animals. And she had to open up the box with the butterflies.
Typecast.
I know. They were like, this girl loves. I also play a lot of, it's like always a period piece. So it's like in Kimmy, it was a flashback episode. So it's supposed to be like 2007. And then I was in The Loudest Voice, and I was in the episode that was about 9/11.
Oh,
and my role in that, they cut. I had one line in that, and they cut it. Still sore about it.
Yeah.
It was like we had to run up to the roof, and then it was as if I was an assistant at Fox News, and we run up to the roof, and one of the buildings had already been struck. And so my reaction had to be to the second plane hitting the second Twin Tower. And when that came out, me and all of my friends were like, I am the new queer face of 9/11. Because there's just, because they cut my line, but there's a close up of me just looking like horrified. And so, yeah, I'm a period actor. Maisel, 2007, Kimmy, 9/11.
Oh my God. What's next? I can't wait to see.
So wait, get back to the butterflies though.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. Butterflies. So it was like she was supposed to open the box and the butterflies were supposed to fly away. And they had like two boxes of butterflies. And the first one that opened up, I think they were fully dead. And they're like open up and nothing happened. And she like shook the box a little bit. Still nothing flew out. And they're like, it's okay. It's okay. And like, tried to. And then what they had to do was take all of the live butterflies and put them into a different box for her to then open it up. So it is a little bit animal cruelty, but they got the shot. That's what's important, right?
Oh my God.
Because they got the shot of those butterflies.
You always see something about that with butterflies. Like on Drag Race, on the finale, one of the queens, Asia O'Hara, did like a reveal and opened a box of butterflies, and they were just like dead, like falling dead on the stage.
They're very sensitive creatures.
It's the same with like when people let out like doves and stuff at weddings.
That's always a big risk.
Yikes.
And you don't know. And also they're animals. They're unpredictable. So I guess Maisel, they made the right call in cutting the pigeons. Because who knows? What could have happened?
Well, they auditioned too, just like you.
They did for 4 years. It took just as long for the pigeons as it did for me to get on that show.
Oh my God. I love it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You also have more fun projects coming up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about 1 Million Girls.
1 Million Girls. So 1 Million Girls is Gara, who has done the pod before, friend of the pod.
Yeah,
Gara and I, we say it's our revolutionary brainchild. And so it's like we've been doing our live show, which is mostly us doing characters and music and dances.
And spitting in each other's mouths.
Yes.
We do that pretty often because people love it.
It was a hit. One. It's kind of like with toddlers. It's like you do something that makes them laugh once and you're like, well, I guess I have to do this
for
900
more
times. Yeah.
It is. It's that we, oh my gosh, at one of our recent shows, we wrote a jukebox musical and where it was, we were turning disobedience, you know, Rachel on Rachel. We were turning disobedience into demi-obedience. So we did it all with Demi Lovato songs. And of course, we had to spit in each other's mouths.
You have to.
Wow. This is two episodes in a row where we're talking about the mouth spitting in disobedience. This is great. I love it.
Not the last.
It was a huge cultural shift when that came out.
Yes.
Yes.
Huge. Changed the game.
I saw it at BAM with a bunch of older white people who, what are you guys doing here? And I did see the spit, but I also whipped my neck around to look at everyone else's reaction at the time.
And were they loving it?
They were a little, it was a lot of furrowed brows.
Yeah. Cecilia and I screamed. Yeah. We just screamed. We're just like, ah!
Yeah. I rewound immediately. I was like, what?
And to be doing that during COVID, brave.
Well, that's the thing is I only spit into Gara's mouth. I will not.
Right.
I don't think I could be on the receiving end of that.
Okay.
One time I spit into Gara's mouth and they told me that they could taste it for an hour afterwards. How horrible is that?
Did you just have coffee?
Listen, no, I think we were drinking, so it probably just tasted like stale beer. But maybe I should go to a dentist. Like, what does that say about me? But so after they told me that, I'm like, you can never spit in my mouth.
You did it to yourself.
Yeah.
Love that reciprocal relationship. In disobedience, one of the reasons, because I thought, like, it looks weird, but it's because they used a flavor lube. So next time you spit into Kara's mouth, use flavored lube and see.
Oh, see what that'll happens. Probably taste better for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, normally I just really work something up and then I just spit.
Plus, it'll look really impressive. They'll be like, whoa, that's...
How did she produce so much spit?
So much clear saliva.
Yeah. Maybe we'll add it in the pilot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because Gara and I, we're turning our live show into the pilot. That's what we're filming it next weekend, too.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
I have, like, a shipment of, like, 8 wigs coming in today. I'm so excited to see them.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm so pumped. It's, like, the entire crew that we've assembled is queer. Our entire cast is queer. So it's just going to be, like, 4 days of filming these, like, very wacky characters and sketches with just, like, a bunch of queers in one space. I'm really pumped for it.
Yes. I love it. I think, who's directing it?
Valeria Avina, I think is their last name.
Valeria Avina. Okay.
They're a professional clown.
Great.
That's fun.
Isn't that amazing? We were like, who? Because Gara and I have such a tight-knit, we're an operation. We do what we do. We're so used to working together and improvising. Yeah. And so it was like, we really need to find someone who's comfortable, you know, kind of becoming a throuple with us and who's just down to get very weird. And that is exactly, exactly Val.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. If your live shows are any indication, it's going to be hilarious. You guys are so prolific. Congrats on finding each other.
We really lucked out with that.
When I picture you two, it's like entangled. Like, you guys are just like one.
Because that's also what we do on stage.
Yeah.
Because we always somehow end up all over each other.
What's the origin story there of you and Gara?
So Gara and I first met at, like, an LGBTQ comedy competition. And so we met at that, and I did not like them. I was like, no, annoying. And Gara knows this, so I can say this. I was like, no, not for me. Because I think that they just seemed too cool. And whenever someone seems too cool for me, I'm like, okay, we don't like each other.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, oh, I don't know about them. And then we ran into each other again. We were both at HBO Women in Comedy Festival. And then there, I was like, oh, okay, we're both at this thing, too. And then we had them with my improv team that I had before the pandemic. Because pandemic kind of took improv from a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
It's harder to get a group of people in one place just to play pretend. It's like, is it worth it?
Yeah. We were already questioning if it was worth it before the pandemic. We were all on our own journeys. And then the pandemic came and, like, very kindly made that decision for a lot of people. Like, I think it really helped a lot of hopeless improvisers out.
It was a relief.
Like, nope, you can't do it anymore.
Set them free.
Yeah.
Set them free. You don't have to yes and. My sister thinks that it's not yes and. She thinks it's and if.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, I'll say something and she'll be like, and if. That's not it. That's not it. But so we had Gara on one of our improv shows. And I think that I like to think of Gara as like my little talent scout, where Gara saw me and then was like, we're doing it. And then we were on another show where I did musical comedy on it. And then they approached me and asked me to host a show that they had been producing with someone else. And so I first came on as like, oh, I'll help out host. And then it was just so clear that our sensibilities were so, it's so musical and it's so, and it's also very improv based. And so it was just such a match made in heaven. And so then from there, we're like, okay, we got to take the show on the road and we got to milk it for all it's worth. At our last show, Carolyn, when you were talking about the tarot cards, I did a character where I came out to do tarot readings. My name was Deborah, and I was just helping everybody out doing a tarot reading. And Gara and I started to do a bit where they had said that I was their mom's friend. But then Gara and I started to, like, have sexual tension in this improv scene we were doing. And we were like, how do we get out of this? Because it's like, okay, the audience either wants us to kiss or they want us to stop. And so we were, like, working towards kissing, but we were like, this feels inappropriate. And then I was like, let's pull a card. And the card that we pulled was the devil. And we're like, that's a sign. We got to drop the bit. We got to stop.
That's so funny. And also, I think reminds me of an old listener question we have that was like somebody that was having sexual tension with their mom's friend. It was like, my mom's friend keeps hitting on me.
One of our last ones. No, just kidding. That's not why.
Wait, did you guys give advice?
Yeah, we're like, don't not appropriate. Don't run away. This person was like very young too. I think they were like 20 and their mom's friend was like being very inappropriate and what I think was like going through a divorce.
No.
And it's like a million red flags, run away.
They really laid out a list of red flags and we're like, so what should I do?
Yeah.
It's like, if you need to hear it from us. Flags.
Yeah.
Oh my, you guys, this reminds me of, okay, I told you guys in the message, there is this lesbian age gap TikTok couple that I've been dying to tell you guys about. Okay.
Let's go.
Are you guys on TikTok?
No,
Good for you.
Yeah.
I was just looking at your TikTok, okay?
Yeah, like
good following there. I was like, oh my God. Look at her. Viral.
I'll seek out select TikToks from people I know, but I do not just scroll on TikTok. But there is like a lesbian age gap couple that I'm also like, there was a point where I went down the rabbit hole with them and I'm wondering if it's the same one. So keep talking.
Okay. So the algorithm, if you're really on there as much as I am on there, it really starts to know you. And so pretty quickly, TikTok was like, okay, into lesbian MILFs. And so then it just kept showing me all of these older lesbian women. And there was this one woman who was like maybe 46 and she had just come out. And this was in like early pandemic. So it's like 2020. She had just come out and she was posting about like coming out later on and starting to date. And of course, all of these young little lesbians come crawling in the comments and they're like, you're so yummy, mommy. Like everyone wanted her. And so she would post videos being like, no, I will absolutely not date anyone under the age of 40. And then on one historic day, she posted a TikTok where she was lip syncing to the song where it goes, fuck what I said, that don't mean shit now. And everyone went nuts in the comments. They were like, this is about age. She's dating someone younger. It turns out that she started dating this 22-year-old girl who lived like all the way across the country, like East Coast. She was West Coast. They start a long-distance TikTok relationship. She ends up moving this 22-year-old out to live with her out west. And then like 2 months ago, they got married.
Oh, okay. My God.
And I have to say the 22-year-old is an aspiring rapper and she is white. Just a thing to note.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Of course. Of course. So, two things. One, I'm definitely not familiar with this couple.
This isn't the same one.
No, this was like an Instagram couple where it's just like the one person is definitely, I mean, has to at least be in their 50s. And the other person is like, I think she's just like young and Brazilian and like really hot. And then like,
just young and hot.
it's just like them like making out, like I don't know. It's just bizarre. And not like just the whole thing about it, it just feels like it's all done for the gram, but people are like, what is this? Two, this sounds like the blueprint for Rosie O'Donnell's new relationship.
Oh, I was just showing Jamie this morning.
It's not that big of a difference.
Girlfriend. Wait, but how much of an age gap is that?
It's almost 20 years.
Early 40s and 60.
Early 40s and 60.
Yeah. Okay.
And Rosie, when she was on our podcast, yes, said that she wasn't going to, that she couldn't do millennials, that millennials were like sliding into her DMs. And she's like, no.
But that's a zennial.
That, yeah. And it was over TikTok that she met this person. And they're both on the West Coast, but she lives in Seattle.
So it's still long distance.
I'm so sorry that I'm so so much of a stalker. I believe she lives in Tacoma.
Oh, Tacoma, you're right. Tacoma, yes. Amy lives in Tacoma.
She's a creator. She's like got a big following.
She's a creator, yeah, yeah.
Rosie's always on TikTok too, so.
Always on TikTok.
And she had videos about how she prefers older women, like mm-hmm. before all this, so I'm so glad right. they found each other.
And I remember seeing her answer people being like, yeah, maybe I would date someone from TikTok. I don't know, but like I'm not looking. And then love found her.
Yes.
So the two that I follow, it's Jamie and Lily are their names. Jamie like stopped posting like in the recent year. So Jamie's not posting and that's the one that we all want. She's the MILF. And so we want to see her contact. And so now we're just seeing Lily and like Lily's writing songs about her. There's one called My Baby that does get stuck in my head now because I think I've watched too many TikToks of her doing them about her. Oh my gosh. You have to look up and see photos from their wedding too. It's really wild.
What's the handle of one of them?
Yeah.
Okay. It's.
I just need a visual reference.
Right.
It's,
same. We have
it's
to.
It's Drippin Lil. Let
me Driven look. Lil?
Drippin, because remember, aspiring white rapper. It's D R I P P I N N L I L, and that's the younger one.
Okay, just looking at the page in TikTok, that's just like
yeah,
short gifs of all the videos. I'm just like problematic.
Yeah. And like, it's just like, how did she? We were all so in love with Jamie, and it's just like, how did they? How did this happen?
Her one of her first when you're tickling her and she lets out a little stinky fart.
And that's her song, That's My Baby.
And then she hashtagged it, That's My Baby.
I'm so scared to watch any of these. I see one that just has text over it, Black creators / Black community, please comment your opinion.
Oh, no, you don't want
so
that.
So curious.
Okay, babe.
Ooh, so curious.
Oh, wait. Jamie's hot.
Jamie is hot.
I don't know what I was expecting, but Jamie's hot.
She is. And she also, she just recently got this haircut. And recently, like a year ago, but it like it was right before she stopped posting that she got this haircut. And she used to have this like long hair and like shaved on one side. And she'd always do this one like sexy flip, the same one to the camera.
Wow, wow, wow.
Thank you
wow,
for
wow.
this gift.
Yes.
I will be doing a deep dive. Seconds after we log off.
I'm also this okay. She is not gay, but I feel like she's a gay icon. Her name is Nancy. I follow her. She posts dance videos. She's very much like a mom living in the Bay Area, and she would post. They're very sexual. Ooh. These dances that she posts, and you can tell that she's just living her best life. You guys have to look her up,
Nancy.
I can't explain her. It's Nancy dot. And then it's Teresi, T-E-R-E-S-I.
There she
as
is.
As soon as I did Nancy dot.
Oh, I've seen her.
You've seen Nancy? Yeah. I love Nancy.
I guess my algorithm knows that I like MILF, I guess.
Yeah, it's MILF talk.
Yeah.
I follow her on Instagram because I love her. I feel like in another universe, I am Nancy. Like, I'm just redoing the lights in my bathroom to look better on TikTok. She did that.
Yep. I just went to her. You're the only one I know following her. Hot gay celebrity is following Nancy. Much smaller following there. You're one of her dedicated 569.
She went live on Instagram yesterday. There were three people on it. I was one of them. And I asked her questions and she answered them.
Yeah.
Well, who else is she going to answer?
She said that her favorite dance move is body rolls.
Ooh. Well, she's good.
That was going to be my follow-up. What are your questions?
Yeah, I asked where she was from, Bay Area, what her favorite dance move was, body rolls. Bay Area, yeah. Body rolls. And then I told her that I hope she has a great night and that her videos bring me joy. And then she blew me a kiss and said, love you, girl.
Oh, my God.
You didn't ask if she's been with women in a biblical way?
I should have. It just felt so intimate there, only the three of us.
Right.
I didn't want to scare her away.
She lives in the Bay Area.
She's been asked that before.
I've never been to California.
You've never been.
You could tell me anything about California and I'd believe it.
You're too fragile
yes. for California.
It's on fire right now. You should not be there.
Yeah, couldn't handle it.
Wow. Well, I mean, you're going to have to be out there at some point with your acting career and your pilot and all of that.
I mean,
yeah, I'm hoping that I go for work.
Yeah. And if you do end up there, like living there, like you just have no choice but to live there as an actor, you're going to have to be driving.
I just got my driver's license.
Okay, I saw your TikTok about learner's permit, mm-hmm. your take on Olivia Rodrigo's driver's license. It's so funny. So I was going to ask, where are you with your driving journey?
I got my driver's license also, it was because of the pandemic. I always said, I was like, I'm not going to get my driver's license because I'm going to be so rich, I'm going to have a driver. I don't need to know. That's what I said. And then, you know, the pandemic came around. I was like, maybe I should learn. Maybe.
Wait, even in Vermont, you weren't driving?
Yeah, isn't that wild? Well, the thing is, my town was so small. I could walk to school. I could walk to the grocery store that I worked at. And then, I mean, I had friends who lived like 45 minutes away because my high school was so small. It was five different towns all in one. But then my friends would just drive me places. And so... Right. I think my older sister didn't get it. And I also was I wanted to go to college and I was working to like save money to go to college. And I was like, well, if I get my driver's license, I have to pay for the test. I then have to pay for insurance. I have to pay for a car. So for me, it was a fiscal decision. I'm not going to do it. And then I went to college. I went to University of Vermont in Burlington, which is a very walkable city. And so, and then I moved here. So I was like, I don't really need it. But then I did get it. During the pandemic. So I could drive in LA. I don't know if I should, but I can. I got a speeding ticket.
Oh man, already.
And I got points on my license, like a bad one.
In Brooklyn?
I was driving on the Taconic and I was driving back. My dad got remarried over the holidays. What a wild time to have a wedding, by the way. It's like, oh, this is convenient for everyone. No, it's not.
Yeah, I did one of those just before the pandemic, and I was like, this is rude.
Yeah. And also, like, in Vermont, it's so cold. And so we were driving back, and so naturally, I was just coming from watching my father get remarried. I was like, I gotta get home. So I was speeding, and I got caught big time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now you're really a driver.
I really am. Well, my girlfriend taught me, which can you believe that we stayed together through her teaching me how to drive?
Wow.
The number of times I would cry parallel parking.
My dad wouldn't teach me because he tried once and then said he has high blood pressure and he will get a heart attack and it would be my fault if he died.
And you're like, okay, I guess I don't want to kill you, so.
Yeah. Then I was taught by my mom, who disregards all authority and rules and would be like, you can turn on that red that clearly said you couldn't if you have to pee. We got to get home. I really have to pee. Do it. So I get tickets. I definitely do.
Yeah. My wife, she hadn't driven in a while. So she had her license and drove like years ago. But then when she moved to New York, she hadn't driven for like 8 years or something before we got a car. So she was like a little bit nervous to get back behind the wheel. And she was like, you know, maybe we could just like do a little practice or something. And I'm like, ask my sister. I'm like, next time we're in Buffalo, maybe Chrissy will get in the car with you, because I feel like it's not good for our relationship to have, because she gets like so nervous when she's driving and I'm next to her. She gets like extra nervous and like messes up just because I'm there. And then I'm like, okay, you're driving into oncoming traffic. And she's like, it's just because you're here. And I'm like, I hope so. I hope that when I'm not here, you are not driving into oncoming traffic.
Well, that's the thing. Learning from Jamie, it was like, she'd be like, okay, and now you have to reverse into the spot. And I'm like, but how do I tell how far to go? She's like, I don't know. You just feel it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is not teaching me anything. We definitely had to park and like watch YouTube videos on how to do things, because she could not communicate it to me, and I would just be like, tell me, what do I do? I'm driving. So yeah.
What's her sign? I know you're a Cancer.
Yeah, she's a Taurus.
Yeah.
Respect.
So we're actually, I listened to you guys' episode the other day where you guys were talking about how none of you are compatible.
Right.
Yeah. On paper.
And Jamie and I are actually, we're very compatible on paper. We like, I love to do it when I'm like talking with someone and they just start dating someone. I'll be like, oh, like what's their sign? And then I'll be like, let's look up the compatibility. And it's always like, you know, like 60%. And I'll be like, I should look up mine and Jamie's. I've never done that before. And then I look it up. I'm like, whoa, 99%. And just rub it in their faces.
Congratulations.
Suckers.
Do you feel like it makes a difference though? Like based on past like non-compatible relationships?
Well, I don't know. It's like, what is astrology and what is just us as humans being compatible?
Right.
You know, I do feel like it adds this feeling of like security. Like I'm such an anxious person and I love to worry about things going wrong. And so it's like, I can't really worry that we're not compatible because the stars say we are.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, if we're ever fighting, I'm like, we'll get through it because we're 99% compatible.
Yeah.
And my grandparents are actually a Cancer Taurus couple. Aww. And they're a second marriage that has been together for a long time. So that's how you know it's real. It's like they just got married and stuck it out.
Right.
They chose to redo it together.
Yeah. Love that.
What are your partner signs?
Sagittarius
and Gemini.
I don't know anything about Sagittariuses.
You know, they're very they don't like to be told what to do. Very just like floating around, wanting to do like different things. Like I feel like it's a good balance, because when she's like floating, sometimes I like pull her back down a little bit. And mm-hmm. then when I have like my head in the ground or I'm just like tunnel vision, whatever, she's, you know, smacks me across the face, not literally, but is like, hey, like go outside for a walk. Like,
yeah,
smell nature. Like you need a break, that kind of stuff. So I feel like it's a great balance because we kind of like help each other where we need it most. But what do you think about the Capricorn Gemini combo?
I'm like, I don't know what to say. It's every day's new adventure. Yeah, we don't like base too much off of it, except for when we're fighting. And we're like, this is just because we're not compatible on paper, but we love each other and we're getting through it. Like, it only comes up in conflict.
Yeah.
The astrological stuff. But
I mean, I didn't know about astrological stuff that much when I was dating a Gemini, but that was like a super toxic, bad relationship. But I think that was more of it just being like my first long-term relationship, and a lot of it was long distance and all of that, so I don't know how much I could be like, oh, it's because they're a Gemini. Tonight I actually have a date with a Gemini.
Oh, look at that. See,
a second time, and the first time it went really well. So
yeah, I just like, we're so different and we balance each other out.
Yeah
you know more going in now about Geminis. That'll really inform it.
What not to do, say.
That's been one of the interesting things about like opening things up and like kind of dating around, is getting to experience signs that I didn't experience before, like with more astrological knowledge, and then definitely projecting things onto these people based on that.
I mean, you're going to astrological themed queer parties where...
Yes, yes.
All the dykes are wearing... Is it
a wristbands?
Wristband that says their sign?
Yes.
Have you seen people like swerve other people because of their sign? Or
I haven't observed that, but yeah, I don't know. Have you been to a scope party, Emily, or no?
No, but I kind of just feel like dykes in general should just wear those, because every single conversation when two queers meet each other is always just like, what's your sign?
Right.
Yeah, and so I think it would just save us the convo if we all just have it right there.
Right.
I know. I want to add it instead of like, what's the gayest thing, or in addition to up top, just establish that just for the listeners. I feel like they want to know right away.
Yeah.
Right.
You should ask big three. And you're big three.
It's so funny, because that toxic relationship that I often fondly refer back to, when I met this is the person that like made me realize that I was a lesbian. Like, when I found out that they were gay, like, I thought my stomach was gonna just like come out of my body. Like, I was like, what is this? And when I first met them and talked to them, the first question they asked me was, what's your sign? And this was back in like high school. So, and like someone from a different school, I'm like, what's my, like, nobody's ever asked me that in my life. I'm like, wow, this person was really ahead of the curve on queer culture, that back then that was their lead question.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course that was the person who made you realize.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Oh my gosh. I didn't meet a lesbian until I was 15. Like, I grew up in such a small town in Vermont, and like, I obviously knew what a lesbian was, but I hadn't met any. And I had always had this like sneaking suspicion that I was not straight. And then I went to an art camp, and then there were so many young lesbians there. And it was literally just this like, I just recognized it, and I was like, okay, all right. And then I put it in my back pocket, and I was like, we'll explore that once we go to college.
It's got to be like, am I a lesbian or am I a resident of Vermont? At least from the outside looking in, it's hard for me to tell.
Emily, I forgot we had this conversation, because I had to get my passport renewed north of Burlington in this like random town. And you're from that town or next to it?
I'm from 20 minutes north of it.
Okay, okay.
You're in St. Albans, yeah.
Yes, in St. Albans. Crazy thing, which I was like very lucky for, that there was an appointment in St. Albans, Vermont, even though I had to drive like 12 hours round trip in one day to get my passport. But someone else I know just had to drop $1,000 to get a passport renewal in time to go to a wedding.
Oh, dang.
They must really love that person.
It's so hard to get like an official appointment through a U.S. passport agency that that was the only feasible one. But when I was there, Cecilia and I were looking around and we're like, is everybody in St. Albans a lesbian, or is this how everybody looks? And I've never been so confused. Like, I've been to a lot, you know, Brooklyn, like I've been to a lot of places where everybody looks queer, but this was like, I would be shocked if this person wasn't a lesbian. And they were always like traveling in pairs. But I'm like, they can't all be lesbians, right?
They're not.
Is this just like Vermont? It's just like dykey looking women traveling in pairs?
Yeah, I mean, flannels, Birkenstocks, like that is Vermont. And then also, like, I'll see people in Bushwick like wearing like, like, camouflage is very in now, and it's like we're queering like the farm boy aesthetic, but that just is the aesthetic in Vermont. And so I think if you're coming from Brooklyn and you're going through, you're like, oh, we're all gay. But growing up there, I'm like, no. Or we all were just very quietly. Just very quietly.
Wow.
We got to get to Vermont. We got to put on a show in Vermont and just find out for ourselves.
I would love to bring like a ton of queers to Swanton and just see what happens there. Just see how it feels.
You know, we should put on a show though, because when I was posting from St. Albans, some other listeners messaged and were like, oh my gosh, we just bought a house there. And if Dyking Out came and did a show, we would bring so many queer people that we know and pack it out.
Oh my God, let's queer rural Vermont.
Let's do it. Okay. I know we all have a lot going on, but I would kind of love to do this. So let's start looking at dates.
Absolutely. We should do it in fall in like leaf peeping.
Yes.
I was
going to say leaf peeping.
We should just get a big house and everyone on the show can stay in the house. Oh my gosh. Wait, we got to do it. And we should do corn mazes. I love corn mazes.
Now we're in a heat wave right now, and I'm so looking forward to that.
Yes.
I love fall.
Oh my gosh. Just like
in New England.
Like a queer fall festival. Cause I feel like those are so straight, but if we do all the straight activities, but like make it gay.
Yeah.
I think, okay, we're onto something here. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah. What a meeting of the minds.
Yeah, watch this space.
Well, we have to wrap up. We do have one last question for you.
Yes.
Even though you already kind of did with the TikTok of it all, do you have any gossip for us?
Oh, gossip. Oh my gosh. Well, I have a friend who, so this is the lesbian web of connection. I'm friends with her girlfriend. She has two moms. She was a donor baby, and she recently did her DNA. And sperm banks tell you that they can only have, like, 7 submissions from, like, one guy. Because
right.
It's like, you can't. She has over 26 half-siblings. And they keep finding them. And she just found out. And they're all about to, like, meet up and do, like, a family reunion. Which is just, they could have met each other. They could have dated each other. Oh, my gosh.
Right. No judgment, but this is why we didn't use a sperm bank. Like, I know a lot of people who use sperm banks and stuff, but, like, that, I kept going back to that, and I'm like, look, if we have a kid, I don't want them being, like, just did a 23andMe, we have 30 people coming to Thanksgiving this year. Like, I don't want to be brought into that many people's lives based on some dude's sperm that I don't know.
Like, yeah.
I don't need that sperm to be that powerful.
But I would watch that movie.
Yes.
I know. That's the thing. I'm like, you guys, you got to film this whole family reunion.
Yes.
I need to see, do you guys look alike? What's up? And they were. Yeah. They were all in close proximity. It was all kind of like within the same like 3 states area.
But that's why it's freaky, because people are attracted to people who look like them. So I also feel like, if you don't know who your half-siblings are, like there's actually, I think, a much higher chance that you would randomly date like a mysterious half-sibling than...
Yeah. That is funny to me, though, that people are attracted to people that they look like, because I could never date a blonde. I feel like I'm the blonde. Like, I've only dated brunettes. And all of my exes, they all brown hair and all the same, like, Warby Parker glasses. All of them. All my serious exes look the exact same.
Is it like you're not attracted to blondes, or like it's like an ego thing?
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So it's funny because I'm like, when my hair isn't pink, it's like strawberry blonde. And I've never dated a redhead, but I've always been like very attracted to redheads like my whole life. And then I knew this other redhead, and they're like, I could never date a redhead because we'd just look like siblings. And I'm like, something's wrong with me. Something.
Yeah, I had a no blondes rule, and I had a no Geminis rule, actually. And look at
and
me
now.
And a
no comedian rule.
And a no comedian rule. And here we are.
For a Capricorn, you really hate rules.
I really do. I'm a 12th house Capricorn. But yeah, Allie used to dye her hair like a lot blonder. So it's a little brunette-y now. Anyways.
Because she stopped because you said no.
Yeah, also, it's expensive. She has like a mane. It's right. Like so much hair. Like, they charge her double for haircuts.
Yeah.
So.
Emily, where should people follow you on the socials?
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram and on TikTok. The at is hot gay celebrity.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Perfect handle. Love it. I love that so much. And everybody follow and go see 1 Million Girls.
Yeah. Is there a GoFundMe too?
Well, so we just finished raising our money. I think we will be raising money as we shoot for post-production. Okay. So I would keep an eye out on our socials. And we do have an Instagram now too for 1 Million Girls. It's at 1 Million and then it's GRRRLS. So girls with 3 R's. And so we'll be posting on there. There's not yet an announcement for when the pilot will be released, but I would keep your eyes peeled.
Yes.
Amazing. We can't wait. And you can follow us at Dyking Out and at Dyking Out Podcast on TikTok. We're going to get around to it one day.
Listen,
This has been the biggest lie of the podcast for 2 years. We're like,
Carolyn, I did the last one and I said, now it's your turn.
Tag, you're it. And then I had
and
failed.
Guess what? That was months ago.
I know. Ugh, man. Shame me into TikToking.
I know. You can follow Carolyn at TGI Carolyn.
Thank you. You can follow Melody at Melody Kamali. Thank you so much for diking out with us this week.
And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.